Have you ever heard something like, you should be ashamed just for being your true, authentic self? Then Teología Sin Vergüenza might be the place for you. We are queer, trans, feministas from Latin America and its diaspora who aren't ashamed of our faith or our activism. Our weekly conversations offer a space for reflection, analysis, and spiritual reclamation as we try to navigate home, faith, familia, and identity. So grab a cup of coffee, whether it's café con leche, café cubano, café de olla, tinto, chorreado, or americano. Join us for the deep dive into the lives of theologians, elders, activists, and everyday saints as we talk about decolonial faith, gender justice, sexuality, and sacred resistance. I'm your host, Reverend Sex. And for all of those who feel like you aren't enough of this or too much of that, ni de aquí, ni de allá, you belong here. Join us for shameless faith conversations about real life right now that you won't find anywhere else. You might just realize that you are a sinvergüenza too.
A negligent mayor, a secluded island, a 4th of July celebration gone wrong. No, this isn't the description for Jaws. This is the setting for Barry Levinson's 2012 found footage horror film, The Bay. Sent to cover the holiday weekend festivities in Claridge, Maryland, we follow Donna Thompson, a young reporter on the verge of her first big story. But soon, things move from eating contests to eaten contestants, as cadavers pile up and the whole town descends into chaos. At the heart of The Bay is an environmental mystery. What could cause a whole town to break out in a rash? What unknown force could ruin a perfect 4th of July celebration? The answer, it seems, is in the water. But more than a natural disaster, the film builds a terrifying argument that leads us back to human ambition, a lack of caution, and a disregard for public safety. What was once a beautiful celebration filled with friends, family, and summertime leisure is turned into a destructive scene of violent horror.
More than found footage, The Bay offers a mockumentary format, allowing Donna, our intrepid reporter, to organize the footage for the sake of building her case. Her ultimate goal seemed to be uncovering the truth of the tragedy and indicting those in charge of keeping the city safe. In so doing, The Bay offers us another reflection on how found footage plays with reality and an opportunity to question our basic systems like water, animal agriculture, and healthcare. So, grab your tastiest crab and join us as we dive into the murky waters of The Bay. But if you start to feel a little funny, don't worry. It's probably just a stomach bug. This is Horror Joy. We're your hosts. I'm Brian Onishi.
And I'm Jeff Stoyanoff. We're two professors celebrating the emotional and intellectual joys of horror. All right, Jens, welcome back to another episode of Horror Joy. Today, we are continuing our found footage horror foray with 2012's The Bay. As we mentioned in the intro, perhaps more mockumentary than found footage, but there's definitely filming going on, there's definitely surveillance going on, and there's most definitely horror going on. Brian and I's job here today is to find some joy by the end of this episode. I'll tell you what it's not going to be, Brian. It's not going to be with wee beastie isopods in the water that could become large beastie isopods that eat you from the inside out. Listeners, there are a number of reasons why I don't like getting into large bodies of water, and The Bay has now added yet another, which is maybe there are giant isopods, mutant isopods from chicken runoff, that and agricultural runoff that's going to make them grow huge and burrow into my skin and eat me from the inside out. And I'm not about that life. But yeah, so we have a lot of things happening in this movie, Brian. And in the cold open, we pointed out there are some connections to Jaws. We have another bad mayor. We have another politician who is politicking, as it were, which is very relatable in 2025, to show us all the great things they've done. And of course, this water treatment plant here, desalinating the water to make it safe drinking water, safe with air quotes, listeners, doesn't filter well enough to get the eggs of the isopods out or something. And so people are drinking it, and that's how they're ingesting these isopods. We got scientists again who are investigating what's happening to these fish. So, you know, you have the marine biologist like we do in Jaws, Richard Dreyfuss's character. Actually, some like interestingly reminds me of Under Paris a bit too, which I know we haven't talked about on the podcast, but the marine biologist, like, hey, something's up. And people are like, No. But even like the marine biologists are disorganized. Anyway, we'll come back to that. And then we have a family, a baby, and then and two relatively newlyweds. Like they haven't been married that long, on a boat, traveling on a boat the entire time. And maybe one of the best examples of dramatic irony we've seen in found footage horror, where we clearly know what's happening and they have no idea until they get there. There's some weird or maybe fun is a better way to put it, callbacks in this film to horror movies from the 80s with like the town celebration going on. I'm thinking of films like Critters. I'm thinking of films like arguably even Gremlins at times, like where you have an entire celebration going on and suddenly everything just goes wildly wrong. It does happen pretty quickly. The mockumentary ties us back to, or the news reporter mockumentary ties us back to what we just talked about on our last episode with Rec. So there are a lot of things to connect back to. Note, the only connection back to Frogman here perhaps is that we have water creatures again. And I guess frogs are technically part water, part land creatures as amphibians. And they are not eating us from the inside out, which I appreciate that. I appreciate them for that. So, Brian, I'm going to pass it over to you and ask you, with the Jaws comparison, is that something we want to talk about for a little bit? Or do we just want to get into the environmental horrors of the bay?
I think, first of all, I want to echo just thanking all the frogs for not eating us from the inside out. That's number one on the to-do list. I do think, watching this the second time, I was like, dude, this does feel like Jaws a little bit. I'm with you that there are lots of other horror films that do this kind of thing where you take a celebration, there's lots of people together, and things just descend into chaos. But you've got this mayor who's clearly driving a driving force of, they want to increase production for the eggs. And to do that, they've got to be able to use the water. And they, when we think about animal agriculture, of course, we have to increase the production of those animals, which requires antibiotics, and that, you know, all of that goes into the water. So there's definitely a lot of eco-horror stuff here. I think what's interesting is that in our Jaws episode, go all the way back, episode number 2, and kind of rooted for Jaws, you know, Jaws wasn't the product of a direct environmental disaster. But it was clear that there was something going on where the humans were involved in creating a situation where Jaws was led to Amity Island. Here, I'm not sure that I'm going to root for the isopods. The mayor is like awful, but I think I'm just not ready to root for the isopods. You know, if Jaws wants the water, he can have it. But if the isopods want the water, I don't know. I don't know what to do. So I think there's something there about, you know, who we're rooting for, et cetera. I do think that there's something interesting about, like, is this a thought experiment? Do we say like, oh, what would happen if Jaws was a found footage thing, right? Could we imagine Richard Dreyfuss running around with his camera and like he's got a really fancy camera? And of course, the sheriff just has his little like family one that he's been using for Christmas or whatever. And, you know, we get these different kinds of things. But I think something that highlights, and I want to talk through this a little bit with you. So one, the Jaws stuff is there. I think it's like an explicitly American take on what's going on. Like everything feels so American in this celebration, in what's happening with the chaos that ensues in the celebration. But what I want to get to a little bit is the technology, right? I think that as we've talked through these different found footage films, we have run up against different kinds of technologies. So in Frogman, it's a deliberate use of an old camera because that's what Dallas first encountered the frog with. And so they're using an old camera, and it's in some way tricking you into believing that the film that you're watching is grainy, it's old, it must be real because of that. Rec, on the other hand, is using kind of a higher end camera because this is a news crew. They have a professional cameraman who's doing all the work, but the camera itself is fairly professional, and it gives you the feeling that you are there with a film crew. You're seeing reality in Rec just like you would see it on your television. So we fast forward to 2012, and the technology has changed, right? It's a curiosity to me. And I'll throw this back to you with this question. The technology is different in each of these films, but in The Bay, this is mockumentary in the sense that we're not only getting the camera from the film crew, which we do have, right? Donna and her cameraman are out there capturing all the stuff. They're capturing the eating contest. And that scene, oh my goodness, is so gross. But I also love it. We get Skype videos, we get security cameras, we get FaceTime videos, we get all these different things. And I think one question that I have is, why are we seeing a different take on found footage as a mockumentary? And I'm going to lean into an idea and I'll throw it to you. The idea here is that in order for us to feel like we're seeing reality, the technology has to match the reality that we encounter. And so if we are encountering the world through YouTube, through FaceTime, through Skype at the time, remember Skype? What happened to Skype? That's why we have to see the world in this way. So one, is there a different take? Like, is that seem right to you? Is there a different take? But two, what does that mean about what found footage looks like right now? So I'll throw it to you with those questions. I want to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a good take. I think that's right. Like, we need to have our reality reflected in the way in which found footage is working. But also, as we've identified it, it's not exactly found footage. Like, it's both found footage and mockumentary. It might speak to surveillance and how much more surveillance this is. This is reminding me of our conversation with weapons, with the Ring doorbell cameras. There's always a record now of people with the video that we can take relatively cheaply too. Like, it's, you can buy an entire camera setup for the exterior of your home for, I would guess, under a couple hundred dollars at this point. That all connects to your Google Home app and you can watch things at all times. You can have cameras inside of your house. And I think we've mentioned before how that is, how Paranormal Activity, how that franchise really runs with the idea of like having cameras all throughout the house. But The Bay's doing something a little different where we're getting like footage from different perspectives on different narratives, like different timelines, I should say. The Skype call, I mean, man, Skype, right? Like, I can still hear the little jingle that Skype would play when you were waiting for a call to pick up. I think we're better off with Zoom, honestly, like rip Skype. But I think there is something that you're, what you're saying, where it needs to reflect our reality, even though, like, you know, Frogman was made in 2023 and is a callback to older technology. We'll see what Anthony Cousins does with Frogman Returns to see, like, maybe if there's any play with digital recording. We see, I don't think we see any cell phone recording in The Bay yet, because 2012, cell phones are taking pictures, but their like video storage capability is not as ubiquitous as it is now. I imagine if you do a found footage horror film today, you'd have people using their cameras to record everything, much like we see, like, in, unfortunately, in when we have violence, whether it's ICE agents or police brutality, or people are recording what's happening, because that's, you know, I mean, all of us have a cell phone or a smartphone, unfortunately, I think, in our pockets that serves as we become our little documentarians. This, like, there's something, I'm making a connection in my brain, and I don't really know how to voice it yet, but there's something about, like, maybe something about scientific observation with a way in which documenting these scenes using the documentary style is making a statement about what we're seeing in The Bay. Like, the video evidence almost seems to be a scientific empiricism that is showing us that these things exist, showing us what's happening to these people, using the news footage from the mayor and the mayor lying. So I think it's speaking to what we've talked about on the podcast before, a growing distrust of systems and a growing belief that, you know, there are forces out there that are manipulating you and trying to, if not necessarily put you in danger, they're definitely not concerned about your safety. So, you know, with the water treatment plant, like, that's what I keep coming back to and thinking about, like, how we take water for granted frequently in the modern world, but in many countries in the developing world, water is not something you can take for granted. In just the not too distant past, water is not something you can take for granted. Where we are here in central Pennsylvania, so much of our water was polluted by acid mine drainage and runoff, or other types of pollution from industry. Fracking poses a clear and present danger to groundwater. And, you know, and like, we're not getting our water from the Chesapeake Bay, but our watershed is the Chesapeake Bay watershed, and we know that the Chesapeake Bay is more and more polluted year after year. Like, it does not sustain life at the levels that it used to. And like, that is a clear and present danger for us as inhabitants of the world, frankly, but you know, of the eastern seaboard of the United States, especially if we are buying, consuming seafood and the like, let alone drinking the water or swimming in it. But yeah, so I'm with you, Brian, on the idea of this new type of found footage reflecting our experience, or maybe meant to mirror our experience as we go through life. I find the narrative at times a little more disjointed as a result, like where there's not one perspective that we're getting, but we keep coming from multiple perspectives. So it does feel in a way almost like a cold case file where we're going through and seeing, oh, wow, so we have this footage, we have that footage, and we're trying to put it all together to figure out what's happening. So playing with that style in mixed with found footage, like, you know, I'm thinking of some of these movies that are told not in linear narratives, like we get that element to it as well, where we go back and find out things as we go. We get other technology, like we have the sound recordings of the police officers communicating back and forth too, the phone calls to 911, the doctor in the ER who is talking with the CDC, and that seems to be Skype, right? And just then, like, the lost signal, missed voicemail from the mother of the woman on the boat with her husband and the baby. But that's because the government at that point has shut down all communication in Claridge, Maryland. So that reminds you kind of Jaws 2, where people are not allowed to get off or on the island. So they're stuck there. The city itself is on lockdown. And we've seen this, you know, and I'm thinking of The Mist when we see that element there too. So governments being weaponized in a similar way to what we're familiar with. But it's like a more individualized horror in the sense of it's happening to your body. And I'm definitely not Team Isopod. Like, I'll root for Jaws all day long, man, but I am not rooting for these isopods. But at the end, spoiler alert, listeners, if you haven't seen The Bay, please go watch it. When they dump that chlorine there, I'm like, yeah, you kill those things. Like, let the larger animals live. Just kill these small little things. I don't need wee beasties swimming through my insides trying to eat their way out. So maybe moving from that, Brian, there's something about the reporter in this movie that I find incredibly annoying. And I know it's meant to be like showing that she is amateur and she is learning, but I wonder if this goes to your point too about how it's supposed to reflect the reality we're in. This news reporter, maybe like Wreck, but this news reporter is definitely looking for some good footage to be her big break. And so I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about that. If not, feel free to move us on to something else. But the way in which that news reporter is our unreliable-ish narrator, or is one of the narrators we get in this film, and is often like not someone you're rooting for.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's something about her voice that's maybe a little bit annoying, but I didn't find her to be terribly grating. There is that scene at the eating contest where we see the first time somebody is throwing up. And it's like, something's wrong. And she's like, did you get that? Are you getting that? Like, even there, she, you know, it seems exploitative, really. And I think there's something about the idea that what the news is doing is just exploiting the viewer and the viewer's desire for whatever bleeds, you know, leads and all that stuff for the sake of making money, for the sake of getting eyeballs onto their screens, et cetera. And I think there's something really annoying about that. And we live in a time right now where I think there's a lot of justified criticism of journalism, especially mainstream journalism, not doing enough to highlight all of the things that are actually going on, instead going after the kind of easiest, grossest, dumbest stuff out there. So I do think there's something there. So I read this article by Neil McRobert. So Neil, shout out to Talking Scared. This is from 2015, before he started his podcast. So Neil, if you're out there, this article is really good. But one of the things that he writes in the article, it's called Mimesis, how do you say this word? I don't know. Mimesis of Media, Found Footage Cinema and the Horror of the Real. You English scholars like to say this word. I don't know how to say it. It doesn't matter. Mimesis of Media. The problem that Neil identifies is, in some ways, the found footage element draws us in as spectators too. So if part of the desire of the camera is to make us feel as if we're there, then we are also witnesses. We are also bearing witness to the violence and the destruction that's happening. And so while Donna, as the reporter, could be a poor narrator, we are also poor narrators too. And there's something interesting to me about that, right? That like I'm there, but I'm also part of it. Like I'm also indicted in the fact that I'm watching this stuff. I'm hoping that, you know, she catches the guy throwing up, or she, you know, she catches everything on tape or whatever. Just like in Rec, when she rewinds and she says, "Did I get everything? Right? Did we get it?" And make sure that you record everything, right? I'm indicted as the viewer as I'm brought into the whole thing. And so I think there's something there that's compelling. In terms of the technology and like kind of modern found footage, I haven't seen these, so maybe you have. You can chime in here. But there was a few like Zoom horror films that came out, Host and Unfriended. I didn't watch these. I wanted to. I just didn't get around to it. I think this may capture some of what that, especially 2020, was doing in terms of technology and found footage and all that stuff. I think there's something there. I'm going to be honest with you and tell you that I think that this is my favorite film that we have watched for the found footage series. And the reason is because I thought that this actually tells a very cohesive story. It's giving us really an argument. In some sense, this is the thing that I love the most, is there's a mystery. And then we don't really get an answer, right? We have a pretty good guess as to what happened in terms of why these isopods are the way that they are. They're mutated, they're huge, they shouldn't be in brackish water, the scientists say. But there's an argument that's being made throughout at the same time that you're seeing just the descent into chaos, right? Like you said, every system fails. The water system that we rely on, that we assume is good, is failing. The healthcare system that we assume can handle our problems fails. The public safety in the, are they sheriffs or are they police officers? It doesn't matter. This fails too. And I think those scenes that we get with the police officers are some of the hardest scenes, especially the one with Jim. Jim takes it upon himself to relieve other people of their misery. And it's hard to watch. But when the people that are supposed to keep us safe are the people that are the most harmful, this is potentially some of the stuff that's hardest to watch. But it's also cueing us very clearly into some of the things that we're seeing right now. So I'm going to flip this real quick here, because I think watching police officers do harm is so hard. I'm going to attach this to Kevin Wetmore's claim that part of what we're getting in found footage is a response, especially Cloverfield, but maybe here in the Bay, to 9/11 and the horror that we see there. This was in 2012, but something that I was thinking of is in 2014, we had these protests in Ferguson. And the coverage, I remember watching the coverage and thinking, this looks like a war zone. This is incredible chaos. And Ferguson, of course, is responding to Michael Brown's death, right, at the hands of a police officer. What am I getting at here? Is that I think the Bay highlights the horror for us as we are brought into the movie of the reality in which we're in. And it highlights the way that, as you were saying, reporters and the journalistic kind of aesthetic is to create chaos. And the Ferguson protests, the things that the response to Michael Brown is where I landed as just remembering watching something. And of course, we had lots of other protests, especially during 2020, that we can call upon. But this was close to 2012. And so I don't know. I'm not sure if I landed on anything there. I'm going to pass it back to you just to get your thoughts on any of that. But we can move on to any other thing you wanted to talk about, too.
I think it's really important to think about the way in which this movie is reported, actually. Like, might be a way to think about it. It's worth pointing out, looking at a Cinema Blend article here, Levinson talks about how this 85% of the premise is factual. And let's see, just read a quote here. As a Baltimore, Maryland native, Levinson said he was approached by neighbors who encouraged him to make a doc about the shocking fact that 40% of the Bay's wildlife was dead. Levinson decided adding a dash of horror fiction to disturbing facts would be more impactful, and so we have The Bay. End of the quote. So, I mean, I think we could take this two ways. In one way, like, maybe it's this found footage mockumentary style, because initially the idea may have been a documentary. But actually, I would say the dash of horror is the found footage style. Like, I think that there is something that's, again, really discomforting. It's disorienting at times. I agree with you that there's a narrative here, and it's a clear narrative. But it also, you know, you bring up Ferguson. So the responses we see to things like protesting for social justice, the sort of ridiculous police response to people protesting any type of social justice issues, compared to the complete lack of federal police response to something like The Bay, where the federal government doesn't want to deal with it. Like, they're like, nope, we're going to lock you up. We're going to cut you off. We don't want to come help you. We are going to hope that this thing works itself out. And I think that's interestingly speaks to the way in which power views horror, which is to say, for power, people are more horrific than zombies, than isopods, than Jaws, frankly. I mean, like, they are, just so you know, great white sharks. Power wants to hold on to power. And so the true horror for power is anything that threatens that. And if admitting someone's wrong, if going in and showing like some sort of empathy, if that could threaten power, then it's not going to happen. And that's like, that's what we're seeing in this movie. There's no help for these people once the isopods are inside of them. And it's not clear that there would be any way to save them anyway, even if the CDC sent every last scientist and doctor they had. But maybe one of the other horrors that we see developing here too is again, it's an environmental horror, which the entire movie is, but it's seeing this found footage film might help people realize, by documenting what's happening, the things that we have been not paying attention to for decades that have led us to this point where now things like this could potentially exist. Like, when 85% of this movie is based on facts, that you know, you're only exaggerating 15%. And so, like, if there are isopods, or these water lice, I think is what they call them, or something like that, that are eating fish and could then feasibly eat humans if the opportunity arose, we're not that far away from a horrific truth that is, we have destroyed a large swaths of our environment. Like, that's something that we just don't like to think about, because we're very, as humans, we're very selfish. We are very self-centered. We are, at least in the United States of America, we suffer in perpetuity from the Calvinist Puritan dogma of like self-righteous, rugged individualism, where we have to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, and we really aren't communities. We are individuals who exist in larger groups. And then that, there's an utter lack of responsibility for then whole groups, because, well, I didn't do it, so it's not my problem, but you have benefited from it. You have been benefiting from an agricultural system that dumps, I mean, untold tons of fertilizer, actual just like chemical fertilizer, into water sources from runoff, let alone the untold amounts of just pollution from livestock waste that also go into these water sources. So I think there's something here too with the government, with these forces don't want to witness what has actually happened. Like, they don't want to go and actually witness, which would then validate the terror, would validate the horror by showing up. And so we, as viewers, are left in that position. Because it's found footage, we are the narrators who are left to say, okay, this is the story that we witnessed happen. And therefore, like, we can attest to the horrors that happened here that otherwise might never get talked about again. So again, I'm thinking back to Weapons, like, where, yeah, no one talks about it anymore. But also, because it's recorded, you know, we can show, like, this is what happens. Like, we have enacted this horror upon ourselves. This is not like the isopods didn't just like get a hair up their ass and say, well, you know, I'm going to start eating people. It turns out that we have made an environment, because of our own negligence, suitable for them to both grow very large, and also we like actually drank the water ourselves. Like when I'm watching this movie, I'm thinking, this is like a complete random aside, but I'm thinking about the Dave Matthews song, like "Don't Drink the Water," and I'm just like, just have that playing in my head the entire time. And you know, maybe that could have saved us with that. So Brian, as our resident expert in the eco weird, I'm curious to hear, like, if there are other elements of eco horror here that I am just not catching, if there are other elements that, you know, it works specifically with found footage here that maybe you're thinking about, or again, you know, we can move on to something else as well.
Yeah, it's funny. So yeah, you mentioned eco weird. This is something I've been working on. I mentioned it a little bit here on the podcast. I have an edited volume out with Nathan Ambell called The Call of the Eco Weird. You know, and we had a really cool symposium not too long ago about it. But I'm not sure if, you know, how this fits into the eco weird. And part of that is because of the way that you identified the scientists as kind of very clearly explaining the linear progression of how we got from A to B. I think the eco weird actually shows up here, not in the actual production of the isopods as mutated, right? That's a very clear linear problem that we have. Like, look, we have too many chickens, and the chickens are on antibiotics, and the chickens are on steroids, and this is dumping all the chicken shit into the bay, and that's creating a nutrient problem, and we're getting these mutations, right? I think the weird shows up in the baseline of American culture. And so if the weird is here, is to show you how strange what we do actually is. So the eco weird, as I've argued for it, is not a rupture from the outside, but it's something from the inside showing up, showing itself, right? It's not something that comes in from somewhere else. This is the typical take on the weird. And so what shows up in the bay is just the destructive nature of our baseline activities. The idea that what we need to do is we need to eat more chicken nuggets, and we need to eat more chicken nuggets, so we need to have more chickens. And to have more chickens, we need to have more, you know, all of these antibiotics and all of the steroids and all of the stuff that ends up leading to the problem. And so again, the weird is that American life is just a weird shit show, and we need to like confront that as a weird thing, right? So weird sometimes gets designated too as Western, educated, industrialized, rich, and democratic. And I think there's a funny argument here that that's exactly what we get in the Bay. Something that I wanted to talk about a little bit is that in many ways, we're not actually getting a question of justice. So I read some stuff about Levinson and how, yeah, he saw that what was happening in the Chesapeake Bay and wanted to kind of highlight it. And he thought that horror was the place that could do the most amount to highlight exactly what's going on. And I think that's incredible. That's exactly what we talk about here on the podcast, that horror is the kind of thing that's shining a light on the anxieties and the problems of our time. And I think Levinson's insight to make this film, his only horror film as a documentary, as shining a light, I think is really incredible. But it's not as if Claridge, Maryland seems like an underprivileged place. We don't really get much in terms of diversity. We don't get a clear grasp of the demographic, but it seems mostly white. And so when we think about environmental justice and the fair or unfair distribution of benefits and burdens, it doesn't seem like we're really getting that highlighted here. Right here in Pennsylvania, we have a very famous case of environmental justice in Chester, Pennsylvania, with trash incinerators and trash processing plants put into places that were historically poor, marginalized people that could not move out of there if they wanted to. Anyways, we're going to move past this just because I think that something interesting about this is that maybe there's a blindness to the fact that this isn't really showcasing an environmental justice. This is showcasing the damage that we are doing to the, like in our baseline activities. But the justice question may not actually be part of it. The one thing I wanted to point out here is I have been doing a little bit of reading on the found footage genre generally, and have been reading this book, Found Footage Horror Films, A Cognitive Approach. And something that I think that I just wanted to highlight here is something that the author is Peter Turner, is calling the diegetic camera. And so the camera in found footage is diegetic. And what that means is that it's just acknowledged in the film itself. And there's a difference between a point of view shot that we get in something like Halloween via Michael Myers and the diegetic camera. It's brought along with us. Somebody is holding that camera. And I wonder if that's how we can expand this world, if we can expand the rules of found footage to include all of these security cameras and Zoom footage and cell phone footage and all that kind of stuff, because it remains a kind of diegetic camera. And the thing that I landed on is that the camera wants to show itself. That's something about found footage that's very different than not found footage, that the camera always wants to show itself, whether in its grainy quality, in its, you know, timeline, it's telling you the time and date on the corners of the screen, you know, it's showing you that it's recording or whatever it might be. The camera wants to show itself in found footage. Okay, I think I rambled on there. I'm going to turn it back to you. Any thoughts about any of that stuff? I think I spent too much time talking about the eco weird, but I don't know. I guess that's what happens. Warning to you, Jeff, don't bring it up anymore.
No, that all makes a lot of sense to me. I think we talked about this like briefly when we started this mini series on found footage, where even though we're aware we're watching a movie, there's something about found footage that suspends our disbelief of watching a movie, and we suddenly feel like we're watching a documentary, whether it's Blair Witch Project or Frogman or Rec or now The Bay, like where, you know, I'm, again, as I opened the show with our comments, like I'm not getting in the water. Like I'm not interested in getting in the water. I don't want the sea lice, the isopods getting inside of me or on me or touching me. I'm not here for it. Like if you like the water, great, have fun. To your point about like the camera showing us itself and the Turner bit about diegetic, there's another quote from this article in Cinema Blend I just want to bring to you real quick. And I think this like actually confirms what you're thinking through here with The Bay and what Turner is talking about in the book. So apparently, Levinson's team experimented with over 100 different cameras during screen tests, and ultimately 21 different digital recording platforms were chosen for the production, including an iPhone. So maybe my earlier statement is not founded, but I mean, I don't think we actually see anyone recording with a phone in this movie. Maybe they used a phone to record, but I don't think we ourselves see, like we're not watching someone record with their phone. Anyway. Levinson apparently was intrigued by the way social networking and the ease of posting video to the internet has shaped our culture and wanted to bring these elements into telling the 8 to 9 different character arcs to make his found footage flick feel like an archaeological dig with various artifacts uncovered from all over the town's web output. And that's effectively what happens, because when I was thinking about the police talking back and forth on their radios, you also have, I think you have a dash cam where you're watching some of this happen too in the one police car, right? Does that sound right? And so like, yeah, like we have all these different types of cameras that are, I don't want to say they're conscious, but there is like a type of consciousness that the camera in found footage develops where it takes on a life of its own. It follows things that perhaps that we can't see. I'm thinking back to Rec when the camera gets set down and it's just the eye watching. And during our entire conversation, I keep coming back to in my stupid academic brain, Foucault and surveillance. And if found footage, like if the greatest horror of found footage is that it's so believable because we are constantly being surveilled. We are, you know, right now, everything that you and I are saying here on our recording platform is obviously being recorded because like we are choosing to record it. However, you know, get your aluminum foil out, listeners, and wrap your head tight. Our phones are likely also listening to us. Our Alexa devices, our Google devices are waiting for the cue to be brought into the conversation. And so like, you know, you asked about the other more recent found footage films using things like Zoom. So like Host, I've seen Host. It's super creepy to like watch how they are manipulating Zoom and these are like COVID films, I want to say, like where the people put them out after or during the pandemic when we weren't actually able to interact with each other. So we had these found footage films were more of like your web camera watching you and the like. But you know, I mean, again, I think we may have talked about this in the last episode with Rec. How many people now cover up their web cameras because they're worried that it might start watching you without your permission? And we know that it's not the camera itself that's making this decision. It's some type of other malware or like software you've downloaded or the government or, you know, your university or who knows who has decided to try to hack into your system to watch you. But in essence, that makes our camera, to our mind, without knowing who's doing it, kind of conscious. And I wonder too, so to your earlier point about like, is the fact that the camera serves almost as its own character, this diegetic perspective, is that horror compounded then by wondering or left with a sense of wonder going to the eco weird? Again, I won't say it three times or you might show up here in my room. I wonder, verb, not noun, if that contributes to the horror too. This element where the camera has a consciousness, has an agency that it is the almost like the camera in found footage is kind of the final girl, where the camera survives and the rest of us don't often. So I'm going to turn that back to you. There's not a question there. I've just like worked myself into a mental gymnastic knot.
So I think it's not usually the case that we think about it this way. But if we were to imagine that the camera itself had some kind of subjectivity, not that it got around, you know, got up and walked around and like chose what to record and what not to record, but that it shows up as some kind of manifestation of, I don't know, the singularity, right? The singularity through all the kind of different ways that we're recorded and the different ways that we're surveilled and all that stuff. But if we just imagine the camera as subjectivity, that already is like incredibly weird, right? You start to feel very strange about this feeling that the camera itself is collecting a kind of memory about what's going on and is showcasing it to you. I think the thing that I want to like maybe transition into is that there is this, again, it just feels so strangely American. This film showcases, at one point, there's like recordings from a podcast, right? And you hear these kind of overlays and voiceovers, and they're like, they're doing like a voice of the people thing. And it's like, who do we blame for what's going on? Is it terrorists? Oh, maybe it's Satanists. Oh, it's Al Qaeda. No. It's drug dealers. No, it's vaccines. And then finally, we get this idea that it's pesticides and global warming. But that's really pushed off to the side as like a wild idea. But it just feels like we're just caught in this stupid loop as Americans, where we either are blaming the terrorists, the Satanists, the Al Qaeda folks, or, you know, drugs and vaccines. We're just still here doing the same stuff. And we're still rambling about the same conspiracies. When I think, like what you're saying, we know what's actually happening. We know that climate change is happening. We know that what pesticides do. We know what steroids do. We know all of this stuff about animal agriculture. We know all the stuff about actually being surveilled by our phones. Like, we know this. We can make up weird conspiracies about 5G and all that stuff, but we just know that there's somebody actually tracking our phone because we have to turn on location just to have our phones function in the way that we want our phones to function. Like that's where the weird comes in here, is the baseline activity of our daily lives is incredibly strange, but we want to make up conspiracies to cover over the thing that we don't want to see, right? We don't want to see it. I like this, so I'm gonna change courses here just a little bit. I'm gonna say that I like the mockumentary take. I've mentioned this on social media a little bit, but I went to see Shelby Oaks. It started off so strong. I loved it. Had a mockumentary kind of feel to it. Somebody's Missing, folk horror, it's there. I loved it. You and I got a chance to watch Man Finds Tape. I actually liked it a lot, but it also has this kind of mockumentary feel. And it does have this mix of high quality camera stuff and low quality camera stuff, but always the camera showing itself. I think I want to turn to Joy, if that's good for you. And I'll ask you, I'm going to turn it over to you and say, like, hey, one, any response to the weird stuff that I just said? Two, did you find any joy in the Bay? I know we've got these isopods on the loose. And here's the thing, right? If you could imagine a sequel to The Bay, here's what it would be. Billy Bob finds a way to farm the isopods that are growing so large and decides that that's the new lobster and you are going to pay $25 a pound for isopod meat. Anyway, I'm going to throw it back to you on that note.
Speaking of throw, I think I just threw up my mouth thinking about eating isopods. I mean, I know that technically, listeners, yes, lobsters are in closer, more closely related to insects than they are actual fish, I think. I think I heard that at one point. I don't know. I can't afford lobster. I teach at Penn State El Tuna. So...
But that's the exact thing. You can't afford to eat insects. You can't afford to eat the insects, the cockroaches of the sea, Jeff. Shrimp. Yeah. What are shrimp? They're just little gnats of the sea. I don't know. We've been convinced that this is good. Isopods, isopod farms are coming.
Isopod farms are coming. I mean, that's not joyful for me at all. So I'm going to move away from that for 1 second. I do have a deep and unabiding love for the Blair Witch Project and that style of found footage, like where it is, you're getting the unfiltered documentary footage where it's just the people recording who haven't had time to polish it, who haven't had time to piece it together. And this film, the mockumentary style, it is put back together in a way for us to see the narrative more cohesively. So I don't dislike the mockumentary. I like all found footage, to be honest. I'll watch pretty much any of it, even like the bad Paranormal Activities. And listeners, there are some really, really, really bad Paranormal Activities out there on Paramount Plus that like never made it to theaters, but I've watched them because I'm just fascinated at this, like the way horror works through found footage. Maybe that's a good place to turn to joy. Found footage brings me joy. Like, I think this is so much fun. This movie in particular, though, the isopods and the beasties of the sea scare me, and that does not bring me joy. I find it joyful when, like you mentioned earlier, we use horror as a tool to speak truths, where we use it to show viewers like the hard truths they don't want to admit because they'd rather entertain the fabulous fantasies of conspiracy theories. Because there's something fun, like your brain has to work for a conspiracy theory. You have to think like yours, Pepe Silvia from Always Sunny in Philadelphia, with your lines of string to make sense of these narratives, that you're a detective with a conspiracy theory. If you're just acknowledging the truth that like we're dumping too much shit into the ocean, that's just a truth. And that's not super glamorous and it's not very fun. It becomes a problem that not only it's something we could address if we chose to, but we actively choose not to because we don't hold our politicians or our corporations to account, probably because they're one and the same at this point. But that's not joyful. I think like this movie does really satirize like the small town America 4th of July celebration. And I do kind of get a sick sense of joy out of that being disrupted. That sort of like, oh, we're this wealthy seaside town that makes money on tourism, and we don't care about what we're doing to the environment around us. And so this maybe is this is like Jeff's Team Shark coming out again, where like having the environment respond and frankly punish people for what they've done to the environment does bring me some sick amount of joy, I think. Like I think there's like some justice there that I think you're totally right, that we don't see any like reformative justice or social justice discussed in this film. Because in reality, most of the communities that suffer disproportionately to climate change and especially wastewater and other types of refuse, I'm thinking like in parts of the South along the Gulf Coast, are either indigenous or communities of color. And those are the folks who are suffering the most. And even during hurricanes, like out in parts of Charleston in South Carolina, in the Low Country, people always ask, why do these people leave their land? Because if they do, it'll be taken and turned into multi-million dollar rental homes that you'll see on HGTV. So yes, people getting what they have coming to them. Man, maybe I've read Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God too recently, but maybe I'm here for that retributive. Yes, justice. But before, you know, I take us down a sermon path here, Brian, I'll turn it back over to you and ask you where you find joy in this film.
Yeah, I think as a philosopher, I'm always intrigued, nay, excited about arguments. And I think what I like about the mockumentary is that it gives us an argument. It gives us a mystery, and then it gives us an argument for why we should accept the conclusion at the end. And like you're saying, we're detectives. And that's exactly why people love detective stories, is because if you write a detective story, you want your audience to figure it out maybe just before the detective does. But I think that that what I love about the Bay, that it does give this argument, and it gives it from so many different perspectives, and it offers you an account of what goes on when we don't listen. It offers an account of how easily, how fragile our systems are. And while that doesn't seem joyful, I think that, you know, the celebration of horror and joy that we've been taking on, I think in large part settles on this tension between how horror disgusts us, but at the same time, it reveals the world to us. And I think the Bay is right there. It does that exactly. It disgusts me so much, right? There's so much about this movie that's gross and disgusting. It also reveals the world to me. It shows me the world in a way that I think is compelling. And that for me is incredibly joyful. And I don't know. I also love eco-horror. I think I watched this years ago because I was looking for eco-horror and this came up. And something, you know, in my job here, you know, what I do is I teach environmental philosophy and environmental ethics, and I think a lot about environmental problems, animal agriculture, and seeing all of that kind of brought to bear is something that I find exciting and joyful. I do think there's a lot of work, like you're saying, to do in terms of how representation works, how justice works, and the fact that we're really just seeing what would happen to white people and maybe even like rich white people if something like this happened. I think that, again, the kind of horror underneath is that the baseline activity of American culture does do violence to people that are marginalized. And that's also something that we need to keep our eyes on and bear witness to and remain diligent. And again, I think that's something that horror does. So find joy in the process and the project of horror and horror joy, and just being able to kind of talk through it here with you. It's awesome. So, Jeff, we did a lot of work today. We talked about the relationship with Jaws. We talked about the diegetic camera. We talked about found footage and technology. We talked about surveillance and Foucault. Man, Foucault always he always finds his way in, doesn't he? Just want to turn it to you, see if there's any thoughts, and you can take us out.
No, I'm just waiting for you to, invest in Billy Bob's isopod farm where you can... You know, maybe there's an opportunity here for, like, rather than Bubba Gump Shrimp Company, we can do an Onishi Stoyanov isopod company, and we can farm isopods in the Chesapeake Bay and sell them.
I think the real money is not in the actual farm. It's the filter technology. That's what we need to invest our money in, filter technology. We don't need to actually touch the isopods at all.
You know what? If that is possible, that would bring me an obscene amount of joy to not touch the isopods or think about them or touch them or see them ever again. And the triple filtration system could do that for us. Listeners, we don't have filters, as you can tell, but we appreciate you listening. If you have a little bit of extra money hanging around, of course, first and foremost, you should send that to someone in need, especially as we are approaching the Thanksgiving holiday season here in the United States and the holiday season in general. But, you know, if you have a dollar here or there, you can buy us a cup of coffee. You'll see the link in the description. Otherwise, if there are any folks out there, like potentially a seafood company that would like to sponsor the show, we are still in search of sponsors. And I will take back everything I said about isopods. If, in fact, you do farm isopods, dear corporate seafood company, Madam Endorser. But otherwise, we've done a lot of good work today, Brian. I agree. Love the conversation as always. I think that's pretty much all we have time for. So listeners, remember, seek joy, even in horror.
This has been an episode of Horror Joy, produced in conjunction with Axis Mundi Media. Thanks for joining us. We want to hear from you. You can find us at Horror Joy Pod on Instagram or at Horror Joy Pod on YouTube. You can also email us at horrorjoypod@gmail.com, all one word. And you can, of course, find us wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a like, subscribe, leave a review. Until next time, remember, seek joy, even in horror.
Have you ever heard something like, you should be ashamed just for being your true, authentic self? Then Teología Sinvergüenza might be the place for you. We are queer, trans, feministas from Latin America and its diaspora who aren't ashamed of our faith or our activism. Our weekly conversations offer a space for reflection, analysis, and spiritual reclamation as we try to navigate home, faith, familia, and identity. So grab a cup of coffee, whether it's café con leche, café cubano, café de olla, tinto, chorreado, or americano. Join us for the deep dive into the lives of theologians, elders, activists, and everyday saints as we talk about decolonial faith, gender justice, sexuality, and sacred resistance. I'm your host, Reverend Sex. And for all of those who feel like you aren't enough of this or too much of that, ni de aquí, ni de allá, you belong here. Join us for shameless faith conversations about real life right now that you won't find anywhere else. You might just realize that you are a sinvergüenza too.